arrow in his back. Behind him, he would leave three unacknowledged bastards that he knew of, and unpaid bills in a dozen taverns. He didn't know if he had killed any men, but he had thrown stones and knives in brawls, and any number of his opponents might have died of the pummelings he had given them. He had served his emperor, and he had looked forward to a lifetime of defending the house of the second Wilhelm from his enemies. A point jabbed him between the shoulder blades, and he knew it was over.
"Kill me,"
he said, rolling over to present his belly to the sword.
"Kill me to my face."
The Graf was not standing over him. Instead, he found himself staring into a pair of huge amber eyes set either side of a long face. A sparkling horn stuck out from between the animal's eyes and prodded him. The unicorn mare breathed out, and plumes of frost shot from its nostrils. Unicorns are horses with horns, but horses have no range of expression. This unicorn was smiling at him, mocking him. The stallion's eyes had been cloudy, but the mare's were bright, glowing, alarming. He froze and felt his bladder giving out, flooding his trousers with warm wetness. The unicorn whinnied a laugh at him and took its horn away. It was taller than the tallest cavalry horse Otho had ever seen, and long-maned, powerfully muscled, immensely strong. It was also sleekly feminine. Horrified at himself, Otho couldn't help but respond to it as he would to a woman. For the first time in his life, Otho Warnaker saw something he considered beautiful. Then, with a ripple of white in the darkness, it was gone. Otho could not believe his luck. He sobbed relief and laughed out loud, choking on the emotions unloosed from him. Then he heard the other animals coming. They were growling, barking, tearing across the distance between him and them. The two dogs exploded out of the night and sank their teeth into his fat. Otho screamed. Chapter 8. Doremus skidded down the slope, arms out to keep his balance, towards the yapping, screeching tangle.
"Carl! France!"
he called the dogs, but they didn't hear or didn't care. Behind him, Rudiger stood on the crest of the ridge, watching the dogs go for Otho. This had gone far enough. He wasn't going to let the fat idiot get killed. It wasn't as if his father really cared about his mistress. As far as Doremus could judge, he would have thrown Sylvana away soon. It was only natural the woman should cast around for another protector. Admittedly, she had shown poor taste, but Otho was a duke, albeit a thin-blooded parvenu of a duke.
"Carl!"
he shouted, and the dog looked up, red on its teeth. He took Carl's collar and pulled him away. France was chewing Otho's knee, tearing through cloth to get to the flesh. The lodge master was still alive. He didn't even seem to be hurt that much. He had scratches on his face and neck, but the dogs hadn't a taste for human meat. Doremus pulled France away. Calmed, the dogs sat and slavered. Doremus patted their heads. Otho moaned and cried. For some reason, Doremus remembered Schlichter von Dürrenmatt, the undersized lad who hadn't passed the initiation into the League of Karl France. Otho and his fellows had mercilessly kicked and pummeled the boy, throwing him naked into the Reich, advising him to swim home to mother. Doremus wished Schlichter, now a novice of Manan, were here to see Otho Warnaker fouled and humiliated. Doremus threw Otho a kerchief. "Clean yourself up," he said. His father and Magnus were with them now. Rudiger made no attempt to intervene, and watched coldly as the sobbing Otho, his boy's eyes streaming in his fat libertine's face, wiped his wounds, wincing as he touched the cuts. "This quarry was poor," Rudiger said.
"Not worth taking a trophy from." "You should clip his ears at least," Magnus said, half smiling, to show he was joking.
Otho, who didn't see the smile, whimpered.
"I should have his balls for what he's done," Rudiger said, not smiling. "But a man's a man.
and bears little responsibility for the actions of his loins.
The mayor,
Otho said.
She was here.
Rudiger smiled. Was she indeed? A finer quarry than you, jostling for position. But it's no use. The unicorn is tomorrow's animal. Tonight, we're after man's mare. Magnus was concerned.
It could be dangerous. Unicorns don't believe in hunter's etiquette.
Otho was hugging himself, shivering with fear and the cold. Master Varnica, Rudiger said. Listen well. Otho shut up and half sat, looking to the Graf. Go back to the hunting lodge, and a carriage will take you to Middenheim. Tell the coachman to leave before I return from this hunt. Otho nodded, relief dawning on his face. He bent forward to kiss Rudiger's boot. The Graf prodded him in the chest and snarled disgust. My son will be the next lodge master?
Otho said yes,
several times, tears flowing freely.
And he will restore the honour of the League of Carl France.
Magnus helped Otho stand up. It was clear the quarry had wet his trousers. Even Doremus had no more disgust for the fool.
Get out of my sight, Rudiger said.
Otho bowed nervously and scrambled up the slope, grunting and huffing, foam falling from his mouth. The last Doremus saw of Otho was his ample behind vanishing over the crest of the ridge.
He'll find his way back by dawn, Magnus said.
Rudiger shrugged and plodded on. The woman took the left fork back there, he said. She'd have headed for the stream to break her scent.
Father,
Doremus said. Rudiger and Magnus both turned to him.
What?
Rudiger asked, glaring dangerously.
Nothing.
Come on, then. It'll be dawn in an hour, and the quarry will have flown.
Doremus felt shamed, but fell in step with the two huntsmen. Rudiger had been right. The dogs followed Sylvana's trail to the stream, then hesitated. The Graf set them loose, knowing they would find their own way back to the lodge.
It's just us now. A man hunts a woman. That's the way of the world, my son. A man hunts a woman.
Until she catches him, Magnus said, completing the saying.
They followed the stream into the woods. The pre-dawn light was already in the skies, filtering down through the trees as an eerie glowing.
Plenty of time, Rudiger said.
We're near Korn's Cleft,
Magnus said, making the sign of Sigmar at the mention of the Dread Power's name. Korn's Cleft was a deep subsidence, some 300 or 400 feet, cutting through the forest as if a giant axe had struck the hillside. There was a waterfall gushing into the cleft, and local legend had it that the water ran red whenever a mortal crime was committed by the fall. That, of course, was nonsense, although Doremus had heard the waters did have unusual properties. Natural healing, the woodsman's wives called it. As a child, he had cut himself badly on the forehead, and Magnus had washed his face with waters from Korn's Cleft, wiping away and closing up the wound as if it had never been.
Good, the Graf commented. She can't get over that.
They emerged from the trees and stood on the edge of the cleft. Doremus heard the water crashing to the thin, deep lake at the bottom, and saw the rush of the fall from the opposite side of the gorge.
Where is that harlot?
Rudiger swore, knocking an arrow and drawing back his bow. It was impossible that Sylvana could have climbed down. The cleft had no bottom, just the lake. Too many woodsmen had left their bones down there. Doremus looked down, around, and finally up. The cleft was beyond the length of even an athlete's jump. But the spreading trees above met and mingled, creating one canopy. He couldn't see the woman, but he could see where the branches were moving, weighed down by something heavy. Doremus said nothing, but his father looked up anyway.
Cunning minx, he said,
aiming at the moving branches. Magnus laid a hand on his friend's shoulder.
Rudiger, he said.
No.
This ends here. Your honour is restored.
The Graf shook off Magnus, and cold fury burned in his face.
My honour, Magnus?
That has not always been your first concern.
Magnus stood back as if slapped, and his eyes fell. Rudiger took aim again. Doremus could see Sylvana now. She was almost across, her legs hanging down over the waterfall.
Rudiger!
Magnus shouted. Then things happened, quickly and together. Doremus was whirling around, trying to follow it. Inside his mind, there were explosions of clarity. His father let loose his arrow, and it flew straight. Nearby in the woods, there was a crashing as something large loomed. Sylvana didn't scream as the arrow pierced her side, but Doremus heard the tearing of her clothes and flesh as the barb slid into her. Magnus's protest died in his mouth. Hooves struck hard ground, and young trees bent aside. A huge head burst from the trees behind them, amber eyes aflame, horn point flashing like lightning. Rudiger had another arrow ready and away. Sylvana shook the branches she was clinging to, and leaves fluttered down like dead birds swept away by the torrent of the fall. The mare's horn sliced through the distance, and Doremus knew the unicorn would stab his father, spearing him, shoving him from the edge of Corn's cleft. Rudiger's second arrow took Sylvana higher up, in the shoulder, and she lost one hand grip. Boughs creaked and cracked. Magnus made a wrestler's grasp for the unicorn's neck, and she turned her horn to slice at him. The unicorn mare was a vast, awesome creature, silver-white and ancient. Sylvana fell, impossibly slow, towards the waters. The mare's horn caught Magnus below the ribs and gored him. With a splash, Sylvana hit the lip of the waterfall and scrabbled at a rock which divided the rushing waters. The unicorn tossed its head, and Magnus was lifted off the horn, a rope of blood bursting from his wound. Rudiger had still another arrow ready. Magnus hit the ground, spilling over the edge of the cleft, and Doremus, unfrozen at last, reached for him. Sylvana's hands were torn from the rock, and she was swept over the fall. The unicorn bellowed, its sound joining with the woman's scream. Rudiger turned from his kill and met eyes with the mare. Doremus had hold of Magnus and was hauling him back from the precipice. Sunlight broke through and shone off Rudiger's arrow point and the tip of the mare's horn. Magnus was babbling. Rudiger and the unicorn looked at each other. His arrow pointed to the ground, her horn to the sky.
My boy,
Magnus said through agony. The unicorn withdrew without turning and was gone into the woods. It was over for the moment.
My boy, I must tell you.
Doremus listened, but Magnus had fainted. His chest still rose and fell, but his furs were soaked with blood.
Father, Doremus said, help me with Uncle, help me.
He looked at the Graf, who had relaxed his bow. Doremus's father was staring across the cleft. In the first light of day, the waters of the fall seemed red with blood.
Chapter 9.
First, Otho had limped out of the night, dogs at his heels, screaming for a coachman. One was ready, and without a word to Genevieve, the lodgemaster of the League of Carl France left, his hastily packed bags rattling around the carriage with him. Then, shortly after dawn, the others came back, Rudiger and Doremus supporting Magnus.
Keep away from him, leech,
Doremus warned her, as she wanted to help. Magnus, barely awake, shook his head at him. The Count broke away from his companions, and Genevieve took his weight in her arms. It was nothing to her. She laid him down on cushions in the dining hall and tore his clothes away from his wound.
It's deep, she said, but clean, and nothing has been broken or punctured.
He's been lucky. She had picked up a deal of doctoring in her years, among many other skills. Balthus tore up a tablecloth for bandages. Magnus, drifting in and out of consciousness, winced as she wrapped him up tight. A little blood seeped through his bandage. "The wound should knit," she told the others. Doremus was concerned for the invincible, but Rudiger hung back, not interested in the Count's survival.
"We should go out soon," the Graf said. "The mayor is still around."
Genevieve couldn't understand the man she was supposed to kill. His best friend was sorely hurt, and he thought only of chasing a unicorn.
"He'll be avenged," he explained, answering her unasked question.
"He's not dead. He doesn't need vengeance."
Magnus was quiet, compliant. "Balthus," Rudiger ordered, "be ready to leave within half an hour. Today we'll bring back the ivory."
Balthus saluted and went off to get his hunting gear. A door opened and Anulka walked in, eyes vacant, bodice badly laced, hair in rat tails.
"You," Rudiger said, "look after Count Magnus."
The servant obviously didn't understand. Her lips and chin were blue with weird juice.
"Vampire," Rudiger said, "you come with us."
At that moment, Genevieve decided, Tybalt or no, that she would kill the Graf von Unheimlich. She knew there was blood on his hands. He must have killed his mistress. And Sylvana de Castries had not been the first hunting accident in the vicinity of Rudiger's lodge. Magnus, exhausted, was looking at the portrait of the Graf's dead wife.
"Seraphina," he said to himself.
He was exhausted, hurt, delirious. "Anulka," she said to the maid, using her vampire eyes to penetrate the dream fog, "get some weird root. I know you have it. Grind a little into a herbal tea. Give it to the Count. You understand?" The servant nodded, fearful. Weird juice, much diluted, could help take away Magnus's pain. She let Anulka take Magnus and stood up.
"Get ready," Rudiger told her.
"Perhaps you'll learn something about hunting by daylight." Genevieve bowed and withdrew, trotting down the corridor to her quarters. Balthus was already dressed in jerkin and furs, and taking his knives and snares down from the shrine of Tal. "We'll do it today," she told him. He nodded, his back to her. "You keep Doremus occupied, and I'll finish the Graf. Then we'll be free of Tybalt." Genevieve pulled on trousers and a waistcoat. She took one of Balthus's feathered caps and tucked her hair under it.
"What's his hook, Balthus?" she asked. "What makes you Tybalt's puppet?"
The guide turned to her. His beard had grown recently and was creeping up his cheeks towards his eyes. A thatch of ruddy fur swarmed up from his chest and around his neck.
"I might change," he said. "Someday."
"A touch of warpstone, eh? Poor, faithful, dog-altered. Well, you can find a new master and fetch all the sticks you like after this." Balthus didn't look happy about it. Back in the hall, Rudiger was impatient to leave. Magnus, already drifting into the dream from Anulka's tea, was trying to say something, trying to talk to Doremus. The Graf's son knelt by his uncle, trying to listen, but Rudiger was pulling him away.
"Time for that later," the Graf said. "We must be on the trail before it cools."
Genevieve squeezed Magnus's hand and followed the three men out of the lodge. The dogs were tired, so the hunters would have to do without. Around the lodge, where the trees were cleared, it was a pretty morning. The sun was heavy on Genevieve's eyes, but in the dark of the woods, things would be better. The Graf was striding off. He had told Balthus they were heading for Corn's Cleft, to pick up the mare's trail there. Genevieve hesitated, looked back at the lodge, and followed the others. It would be no trouble for her, keeping keeping up. They travelled a recently beaten path, the way Rudiger and Doremus had brought Magnus. Genevieve smelled blood on the ground. Under some circumstances, she was more sensitive than a good dog, but she did not volunteer to stand in for Carl and France. Rudiger was grimly exultant. He sang under his breath, hunting songs of the Forest of Shadows. Unaccountably, Genevieve did not just want to kill him. She wanted to break him, humble him, and drink his blood. What he had told Doremus yesterday was true. You could take strength from your kills. Genevieve wanted his strength. Rudiger had changed since he had killed his woman. He wanted Genevieve by his side and kept tugging at her, keeping her up with him. She guessed his interest in her and planned to use it against him. When Balthus led Doremus away, she would take her teeth and claws to him. Once it was over, she could pitch him into Corn's cleft, and his body would be gone forever. They came to the cleft. This, she understood, was the site of the kill. Genevieve noticed Doremus looking into its depths, hoping for a glimpse of Sylvana. Rudiger was unaffected, down on his knees looking for hoofprints. Here, he said, tapping the frosted ground. Genevieve examined the spore, noting the distance between prints. She must be huge, she said. Yes, grinned Rudiger. An old bitch unicorn. 17 or 18 hands. Ivory longer than my arm. She smelled his arousal. Rudiger took her slender wrist and encompassed it with his mighty fist. She could break his back with her slim hand. I want her horn, he said. He stood up and followed the mare's hoof marks into the trees. Doremus followed, reluctantly it seemed. Genevieve thought the way they were taking was familiar. She took her time, Rudiger said, pointing to a chewed branch well out of human reach. Had some breakfast. She's a cool one, trying to gull us all the time. She'll take a lot of killing. The Graf strode ahead, following the path the mare had made. Genevieve looked to Balthus, and the guide turned away. She knew she couldn't count on him, but she hoped she wouldn't have to. Look, Rudiger said, pointing to a flattened area. You can see the outline. There was a blanket of thin scum on the leafy ground, and the last traces of a skeleton. This was your kill of yesterday, son, Rudiger said. Your wounded stallion must have found her, set her off against us. That's war, of course. We must kill the mare, Doremus, before she kills us. This is what it is to be a man. She had heard raving lunatics make more sense. Rudiger went on ahead, came back, and called them on, urging them to run. She got the feeling Doremus was at the end of his patience with his father. He shouldn't be difficult to distract. Come on, come on, Rudiger said. Genevieve realised what it was that had been plucking at her mind. I know this path, she said. Yes, yes, Rudiger agreed. The track to the lodge. The mare has doubled back, gone on the attack. Very clever, but we aren't fooled. She was appalled. But the Count? An old huntsman's trick, my dear. Leave the wounded as bait. Magnus taught it to me when I was a child. Rudiger laughed, and Genevieve could have struck him down. Her nails were lengthening, sharpening, and her anger was keen. But the Graf was gone, running ahead, all caution flown, enthused by the chase. Balthus caught her eyes and nodded towards the fork in the trail. He could mislead Doremus, and she could end it. She shook her head. We've got to get back to the lodge, she said. Count Magnus is in danger. Uncle, Doremus said. How? The mare has his scent, his blood, Balthus explained. She'll want to finish him. And my father knew? Genevieve asked. Of course he knew. Come on. Stirring Doremus out of his doziness, she ran on, following Rudiger, following the mare. The trees thinned and they neared the lodge. From ahead, she heard a howl, a man's howl of grief and fury. Outpacing Doremus and Balthus, she ran, dodging trees, pushing against the ground. She was fast as a leopard when she had to be, but she was not fast enough. The doors of the lodge hung open, and Rudiger stood before them, still shouting his anger. Genevieve pushed past him and saw she was too late. Anulka was crumpled in the entrance, a bloody hole gouting under her chin, twitching in her last dream. Count Magnus Schellerup lay beyond, beside the overturned and smashed table. He was twisted like an old blanket, and the deep gauze in his chest exposed ribs and vitals. The mare must have tossed him on and off her horn like a child playing with a cup and ball toy. She skidded on the blood and fell to her knees. The smell of the blood was in the air around her, and she salivated. The blood of the dead was repulsive to her, tainted food. She had been reduced to drinking it too many times, but it still made her stomach turn. Magnus's blood, in her, cried out. Doremus was with her now, the wind gone out of him.
Uncle!
It was too late. Behind her, Rudiger was striding back into the woods, determined to have his revenge. Genevieve took a cushion and laid it against Magnus's bloody head, covering his scar. She looked at the unblemished half of his face and at Doremus. Then she shivered, the world turning around and coming down with a nauseating lurch in a new configuration. She understood, and she understood what she had to do. Leaving Magnus, pushing past Doremus and Balthus, she followed Rudiger into the forests. Her foreteeth slid out of their gum sheaths. Chapter 10. Doremus wept in his heart, but no tears came. Uncle Magnus was dead, and there was nothing more to do for him. He looked at the old man's face, his scar covered by the vampire girl's curiously tender gesture. For all his life, Magnus had been there, the old invincible, warm where his father was cold, understanding where his father was indifferent, encouraging where his father was demanding. The Count had not been invincible in the end, but he had died quickly of a mortal and honourable wound, not lingered with some disease, leaking uncontrollably from all orifices, mind befuddled, body diminished. It was not such a bad death, Doremus told himself. Then he looked at the blood, at the ripped wounds, and knew there was no such thing as a good death. Balthus was waiting, in attendance. There were servants all around now, chattering, tutting. Where had they been when the mare was killing the Count? Hiding for the sake of their skins? Doremus followed his father and the vampire, Balthus jogging along with him. No matter what he felt about his father, about hunting, about the kill, Doremus swore he would track down this thing that had slaughtered his uncle and end her life. He would find the mare before Rudiger, and this time he would have a clean kill. Then he would burn his bow. The forests swallowed them up. Chapter 11. Following his trail, Genevieve hunted the huntsman. This had nothing to do with Tybalt. This hunt was hers. She imagined the mare's horn gouging against Magnus's ribs, sinking deep into his belly, pulling out his intestines. And she remembered the cold madness of the Graf Rudiger von Unheimlich. At this moment, there was no more dangerous beast in the forests than a she-vampire. Always she had kept herself apart from the truly dead, those vampires who preyed on the living for pleasure. She had listened to them enthuse about their sport and felt superior to the grave-grown things with their foul breath and red eyes, faces set in beasts' snarls, clinging to their coffins and catacombs by day, gliding on the winds by night in search of juicy necks, relishing the fear they cast about them like a shroud. She remembered those she had known, the Tsarina Catherine, bloody tyrant who reigned for centuries, exultant with the blood of her subjects flowing over her body. Vitsak of the world's edge, a mouthful of teeth like razor-edged pebbles, chewing the flesh of a peasant child. Even her father in darkness, Chandaniac, dandyish as he dabbed the gore from his lips with a lace handkerchief, old and alone behind his handsome face and manners. For the first time in nearly 700 years, Genevieve Dieudonné understood the righteousness of the Red Thirst. She regretted those she had spared. Tybalt, Balthus, Anulka, Otho. She should have gutted them and drunk the blood fresh from their bellies. She should have drunk an ocean from them. Rudiger was travelling fast, keeping ahead of her. She knocked young trees out of her way, enjoying the crack of breaking wood. Birds flew from their falling nests, and small animals scurried out of her way.
"Halt!" a voice said, piercing her red rage and striking her at the heart.
She stood still and found herself in a small clearing. Barely half a dozen yards away, the Graf Rudiger stood, warbow raised, arrow ready.
"Silverhead, wooden shaft," he explained. "In an instant, it would be through your heart."
Genevieve relaxed, stretching out her arms, opening her empty hands.
"Normally, I'd tell you to throw down your weapons, but I can hardly expect you to pluck out your teeth and nails."
Her red rage flared, and she saw Rudiger's face coloured by a bloody film. She fought to control herself, to let the killing thirst die.
"That's right," Rudiger said. "Get a leash on your temper."
He gestured with his arrowhead, and Genevieve sank to a crouch. She crossed her legs under her, hands tucked under her bottom.
"That's better."
Her teeth slipped back, shrinking.
"Tell me, vampire, how much has that grey bookkeeper put on my head? How many of his precious crowns will he part with to get his way?"
Genevieve kept quiet.
"Oh yes, I know all about your mission here. Balthus has the soul of a dog, and the loyalties, too. I've known from the beginning. Tybalt doesn't understand that there's more to a man than a price."
Calm in triumph, Rudiger reminded Genevieve of Mornan Tybalt, eyes glittering as a scheme was fulfilled.
"I'd kill him if it would do any good.
But once Balthus gives testimony, there wouldn't be any point. The jumped-up clerk's son will be back where he belongs, toiling in some tiny office, struggling for a scrap of food, for every tarnished pfennig."
Could she get to him before he shot her?
"You're better than that, vampire. Tybalt must hold you to some crime to make you his tool." Behind Rudiger in the woods, something large was moving. Genevieve could sense her and feel her excitement.
"Let's make a truce."
Rudiger relaxed and let his arrow slide loose. Genevieve nodded, needing the time.
"See,"
Rudiger said, holding the bow in one hand and the arrow separately.
"No harm."
He came to her, but not within her arm's reach.
"You're pretty, Genevieve," he said. "You remind me."
He extended his arm, and his fingertips touched her cheek. She could grab his arm, maybe tear it off.
"No, you're an original,"
he said, taking his hand away.
"You're a huntress, like the mare."
"You'd be good with me."
"After the hunt, there are other pleasures, rewards."
She felt his lust curling out at her. "Good, it might blind him."
"Strange to think you're so old. You look so green, so fresh."
He took her and kissed her, rough tongue pressing against her lips. She tasted the blood in his spit, and it was like pepper in her mouth. She did not fight him, but she did not join him. He let her go.
"Later, we'll raise your enthusiasm. I'm skilled with more than the bow."
Rudiger stood up.
"First, There's ivory to be had. Come on.
He stepped into the woods, and she got up, ready to follow. She did not know what would happen next. She had the mare's scent, and so, obviously, did the Graf.
Chapter 12.
They were back at Corn's Cleft, on the other side from which Sylvana had fallen. For Doremus, this would be a haunted spot now. By day, it was stranger than it had been at night. The waterfall sparkled, and it was possible to see all manner of colours and lights in the water. Balthus was down on all fours, smelling the ground. His backbone had lengthened, straightening his jerkin, and his ears were pointed, shifting back on his skull. It seemed only natural. Even Doremus could sense the call of the woods. He was still seeing things and hearing them. The trees whispered, and the rush of the waterfall was a hissing chatter talking to him, singing him strange music. It was bewitching. He felt like sitting down and listening hard. If he paid attention for long enough, he was sure he could make out what was being said to him. It was the unicorn blood in him. Balthus sat up, snorting, slavering. Then he bounded off into the woods. Doremus should follow him, but he felt a lassitude creeping over him. The whisperings held him back. Balthus was scurrying away. Doremus followed the guide, trailing after his noise. Balthus was yapping like a hound. Tonight, he would want to be kennelled with Carl and France, leaving the leech alone in his bed. He found Balthus at the edge of a clearing, pointing. He pressed his back to a tree and caught his breath. Something was moving between the trees. Something with a silver-white hide that flashed. Doremus had an arrow ready. He kicked Balthus, sending him off to the right, hoping to attract the mare's attention. If she charged the guide, Doremus would get a perfect shot. He could take her in the neck, or the eye, or the withers. Then he could use his knife to finish the job, if it needed finishing. He would prefer a clean kill. It would make his father proud. The mare came to a halt and raised her head, listening. Doremus knew the true kinship of hunter for prey, and understood her thinking. She suspected a trap, but was measuring her chances. Was she confident enough to charge anyway? Balthus barked, and the mare went for him. The unicorn galloped out of the woods and exploded, bigger by daylight than Doremus had imagined last night, into the clearing. Doremus stepped out from behind the tree and advanced a few paces, arrow coming up. There was a shaking in the ground as the unicorn's hooves struck. Then the rumbling increased and became a sharp, earthy scream. The ground was giving way. Doremus fired, but his arrow shot upwards, skittering above the unicorn's eyes and clanging against her horn as she batted it aside, its force spent. The earth tipped like an unbalanced stone, and Doremus slid down it. The unicorn lost her footing too, and whinnied a long stream of forest oaths. Doremus lost his bow and started tearing at the rippling ground, pulling himself out of the subsidence. The mare, heavier than he, and stuck with hooves rather than fingers, just floundered and sank further. Turning his head, Doremus saw the unicorn's head shaking, horn waving, as she fell through into the abandoned dwarf tunnel beneath. He had lost her.
Chapter 13.
They ran to the sound and found where the earth had given way. Doremus was squatting by the hole.
"The mare's down there," he said.
Rudiger needed no more. He scrambled into the hole, calling for them to follow.
"I can see down there," Genevieve said. "You can't."
Balthus, part way through some change, fumbled a tinderbox and a candle out of his pouch and struggled with them. His paw-like hands couldn't work the flint. Doremus took the candle and struck a light to it. Carefully, they let themselves into the hole. It was about twice as deep as a man is tall, and led into a tunnel.
"This must be an arterial route,"
Genevieve said. It's tall enough for us, and for the mare. There were much smaller side tunnels, cobwebbed over, which neither man nor unicorn could have got through.
An easy track, Rudiger said. We just follow the broken webs.
Balthus whimpered, as a spider the size of a house cat scuttled out of its lair. Rudiger took the point of his boot to it, and it squealed as he crushed it against the wall. Rudiger was ahead again, and they were behind. This was going round and round, hunting the hunter, hunting the hunter, and being in turn hunted. Genevieve wanted it finished. The tunnel sloped downwards, deeper into the earth. She hoped the engineers had built to last. Nearer the surface, things were falling apart. These workings had been abandoned since the time of Sigmar. None of the higher races had set foot here for centuries.
There's light ahead,
she said, feeling it in her eyes.
That's impossible, Rudiger snorted.
Doremus covered the candle flame, and they all saw it.
Evidently not, the Graf admitted. My apologies.
The mare had headed for the light. It was cold down here and wet. Water trickled down the walls and around their boots. Their way was barred by a sparkling curtain, and the drumming of water was loud in their ears.
We're behind the waterfall, Doremus said.
It was true. Genevieve stepped forwards and put her hand in the icy curtain, feeling the water splash on her arm and face.
The mare must have plunged through, Rudiger said.
It was a pretty sight.
Come on,
the Graf grunted, holding his nose and throwing himself into the water. For an instant, he was visible in the water, like a bug frozen in ice. Then he was swept away. Doremus was startled.
There must be a way through to the cleft, Genevieve said. He should come out with the mare.
Balthus leaped after his master.
Are you the kind that doesn't like running water? Doremus asked.
I didn't think I was yesterday. Still, neither of them made a move to the curtain.
Can you hear the voice in the water?
Genevieve listened and thought she could hear something frail and pleading in the rush of the fall.
I've been hearing that all day. It must have come from around here somewhere.
Genevieve looked about. To a human, this would be almost as dark as night. To her, it was almost as bright as day.
Douse the candle. I'll see better, she said.
Doremus complied. The rock chamber behind the waterfall became plainer. There were murals carved into the walls, depicting Sigmar wielding his hammer against the goblins. It was indifferent as art, but showed some dwarfish enthusiasm. The noise was a mewling, singing, crying. They found her in an alcove, mossy blankets pulled around her, face pale and thin, almost elfin.
Sylvana?
The woman didn't answer her name.
She must be dead, Doremus said. I saw father shoot two arrows.
Genevieve knelt by the woman and saw how changed she was. The arrows were still in her flesh, but they had sprouted, grown. Green shoots emerged from the wood, and the fletches were heavy with blossom. Her face was changed too, supple as young bark, with a green undertone. Her hair was the consistency and colour of moss. Her thin arms were wrapped around her soft, pulpy body. She had taken root where she lay, been absorbed into the nook. Where she was, she had water and light. Genevieve had heard that these waters had properties. As she looked at Sylvana, flowers blossomed around her face.
Doremus,
Sylvana whispered, her voice coming not from her filmed-over mouth, but from her breathing nostrils.
Doremus.
The young man didn't want to get near the changing woman, but she had something to tell him. Her head raised, neck growing like a branch beneath it.
Rudiger killed your mother,
she said. Doremus nodded, accepting what Sylvana told him. Obviously, that had occurred to him.
And he killed your father, too,
Genevieve added. Doremus's eyes went wide with incomprehension. Chapter 14.
Clever, clever, a voice said behind them.
Rudiger stood, dripping before the waterfall, his knife out, its blade glistening.
Doremus, he said, to my side. I have kills to claim.
Doremus froze, not knowing what to do.
Seraphina, he said. Mother?
A whore, like all women, Rudiger shrugged. You did well to grow up without her warping you with her fussing and fiddling.
The vampire stood up, slowly. In the dark, her eyes seemed to shine red.
I waited for you outside, but only the faithful dog came.
The thing that had been Sylvana shrank, her head sinking into its bed of greenery.
So I returned.
He beckoned with his knife.
That's a poor thing, Graf, Genevieve said.
Where's your other weapon?
Rudiger laughed, as he did at the height of the chase. He tapped his quiver.
In with the arrows.
Father, Doremus said, what does this mean?
You don't have to call me that any more.
It was Magnus, Genevieve told him. I saw it in his face. You have his face.
Suddenly, Doremus understood his uncle, understood the care he had always bestowed on him, understood the glances he had always given Seraphina's portrait.
He was a good friend, and no more to blame for the betrayal than that fat fool last night, Rudiger said. It was the harlot I married, that was all.
Genevieve had been creeping nearer to Rudiger by inches whenever the Graf was paying attention to Doremus. He didn't know which one to help.
Vampire, Rudiger said. Keep your distance.
Genevieve stood still.
How did you know I did for Magnus? He asked.
The Count was killed with a horn. The mare would have used her hooves as well.
Rudiger smiled.
Ah, that's a hunter's observation.
From his quiver, he pulled out his grandfather's trophy.
So pretty, so sharp, so dangerous, he said, looking at Genevieve.
The horn was still red with Magnus's blood.
I couldn't let him take my heir away, Rudiger explained. The name of von Unheimlich must continue, even if the bloodline is interrupted. Honour is more important even than blood.
Doremus knew the Count had been trying to declare himself as his father. When Magnus was wounded, he had wanted him to know, had wanted him to carry the memory.
It was eating him inside, Rudiger continued. He would have spoken out in public, taken you away, taken you for his heir. Now the threat is gone. The family is whole.
Doremus turned away from the Graf and cried for his father. Chapter 15. Genevieve went for Rudiger and collided with him, arms going around him, pushing aside the deadly horn. Together they hit the curtain of water. She clung tight as they plunged down, deep into the lake at the bottom of Corn's Cleft. Under the surface, it was quiet, all sound muffled. She could stay under longer than the Graf. She could drown him, but he was struggling, fighting her. Underwater he was strong, pushing her away. She felt the point of the horn scrape across her thigh, the silver stinging like a lashworm eating in the wound. They broke the surface, and the noise was unbearable. Rudiger was shouting, and the water was hammering down around her. Her blood was all around her. Rudiger ducked under, and she saw his boots kick the air as he went down. She trod water, paddling with her arms. Rudiger rose from the waters, horn held in both hands like a heavy sword, angling down at her. She knifed her legs and twisted out of the way, and the horn stabbed the unresisting water. Making a fist, she punched Rudiger in the side, feeling but not hearing his ribs give way. He turned like a wounded fish and stabbed out, forcing her back. A wave hit her, and she had to keep her balance. The horn came for her again, and she swam back. She found rock behind her and the waterfall pressed her down. Slowly, thinking her pinned down, Rudiger came for her, horn ready for her heart.
"Die, vampire bitch!" he snarled.
The horn jumped, and she let herself be sucked down. Rudiger stabbed the stone, and she shot out her hand, latching onto his throat, feeling his stiff, wet beard in her grip. The horn broke, and she hurled her whole body weight at the Graf. She slammed against him, and he lost his fragment of horn, his hands grabbing for her hair. She had lost her cap, and her hair was loose. Genevieve ignored the pain in her scalp as Rudiger wrenched. He was under her, and as she swam for the mouth of the culvert, she kept pushing the Graf under the surface. He gulped down icy water and choked out bubbles of air. There was hard rock under her feet now, and she scraped the Graf across it. At the edge of Corn's Cleft, the water flowed into a stream, and there was firm ground she could strike for. Her eye teeth were points of pain in her mouth, and she felt the red rage again. She could hear the Graf's heartbeat, feel the blood pounding in his throat. Her nails had dug in, and the beaten man was bleeding. The waterfall had worn a bowl-like indentation in the rock, and at the edge of the culvert there was a ridge that almost breached the surface. Genevieve slammed Rudiger against the ridge, cracking his spine. She stood up, the water pouring out of her clothes, and looked down at her quarry. He was still kicking, but he couldn't hurt her anymore. The Graf's warbow and quiver were washed away, floating down the stream. His knife was at the bottom of the lake. His grandfather's ivory trophy was broken and gone. The fight was out of him. Behind her, Doremus emerged from the waterfall. The need was in her throat, her heart, her stomach, and her loins. She fell upon the Graf like a beast, nuzzling his neck wounds with her mouth and tearing through the skin, chewing into the veins with her sharp teeth. The blood, iced cold by the water flowing around, gushed into her mouth, and she swallowed greedily. This was not loving. This was praying. She drank long, sucking the wounds dry, opening fresh ones, and sucking them too. She tore the Graf's clothes and ripped his flesh. She felt him shrinking inside her, sniffed his passions as they were extinguished, swallowed him whole, and digested him completely. She heard his heartbeat slow to a halt, felt his waterlogged lungs collapse, sensed his blood slowing. At once, she had dead blood in her mouth, and it tasted of ashes. She spat it out and stood up. Graf Rudiger von Unheimlich was beyond the healing of the waters of Corn's Cleft. At the bank of the stream, the unicorn mare stood, amber eyes fixed upon the predator. Genevieve felt the last of Rudiger's blood rush through her heart, and she strode through the water, kicking waves around her. The mare waited for her. Wading ashore, she walked up to the unicorn. They both knew the hunt was over. She placed her arms around the mare's neck and rested her head next to the unicorn's, feeling the fur rise against her cheek. She sensed that the mare was as old as she, that she had known the last of her stallions, that this was the last hunt. Looking into the mare's eye, Genevieve knew it must all be over. With a sudden wrench, she turned the beast's head around, hearing its neck break like the crack of a gun. The old mare went down to her knees and died in peace. There was a final reward. She grasped the horn, feeling the nasty tingle of its silver threads, and plucked it from the mare's forehead. It came loose as easily as a ripe fruit is freed from the bough. The red rage passed from her like a cloud. Chapter 16. "Here, Master Doremus," Genevieve said, handing him the ivory. "A present. A replacement for the trophy that was lost." He was shivering, his clothes heavy with water. Balthus, almost completely a dog, was crouched by the dead mare. He bared his teeth and worried the unicorn's belly. Genevieve kicked him away, and he slipped, yapping, into the woods. He was part of the wild now, like Sylvana. The Drakvald was well known for claiming its own. The vampire stood between her kills, between the unicorn mare and the Graf von Unheimlich.
"This is what hunters are for," she said. "For killing the things that need killing, the things that have outlived their time, have gone beyond their glory."
The ivory felt smooth and beautiful in his hands. "Go home, Doremus," Genevieve said, "and bury your father. Bury him with honour. Take his name if you want, or Count Magnus's. Use your position to harry Mornan Tybalt, whatever." He was still confused about all this. "And as for him," she said, nodding at the Graf, who lay face up in the water, mouth open, "forget that he killed Count Magnus. Remember that he knew what he knew, but let him live as long as he did. That must mean something." The vampire girl was different now, commanding, strong, confident. She didn't disgust him anymore. She was old, but she looked younger now than ever before. "And you?" he said. She looked thoughtful a moment. "I'll stay here a while and lose myself in the forests. I'm a wild thing, too." Genevieve reached up and kissed him, her cold lips against his. Doremus felt a thrill course through him. "Be the man your father would have you be," she said. He left her there and made his way down past the stream. When he was out of her sight, he took one last look at the ivory and tossed it into the water. It sparkled on the stream bed, the current flowing over it. That was a better background for the trophy than any dusty wall. Nearing the lodge, Doremus realised the saying was true. One comes home, and he alone. That was Genevieve Undead by Kim Newman, read by Antonia Beamish. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2019.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.